In today's digital economy, we are all learning on the go. Life is now so instantaneous, convenient, and without the need to interact with a real human. From TikTok, to Uber, to Netflix, or to WhatsApp, we are facing screens more than anything else. Many of us are still working in the good old days of 2018-2019, where grabbing coffee, having water cooler run-ins, and enjoying Friday happy hours were still on vogue. Today, on the Business Wellness Podcast, we will provide you with insight on improving your virtual communication with the help of my friend Robert Kenzel, a senior consultant at Nomium, a consultancy helping you to untrain your old habits to improve your virtual communication, learn to facilitate hybrid live discussions, and completely enhance the way you interact with others personally and professionally. Robert is an American born in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and has over 15 years of business training and coaching experience on all seven continents. He is a former World Championship of Public Speaking semifinalist and holds a number of certifications for team management and professional development. He currently lives in Hong Kong. Enjoy.
And on the note of the pandemic, we're all living now a life in virtual remote. Like, this is how we're doing this right now. How are people, do you find, communicating as they evolve in having this Zoom or virtual remote work life? How have you seen this pan out in regards to communication, speaking, pitching, just in a remote world where no one really does in person anymore, or it's very rare now and it's all virtual? How have you seen this pan out, the shift?
So luckily I had been doing virtual workshops for some of my clients for a few years before the pandemic. Joshua, who opened Nomium, the company I work for, he was in the same boat. And when COVID hit, he said, you know, everything that we've had lined up for the entire year, contracts going, you know, 10 months down the line, are just now up in the air because we can't travel, or in Hong Kong, people don't, you know, they can't have people physically in the office anymore. So he said, we need to take the experience with remote and just dive into that. And within, I think, 6 weeks, he wrote a book called Radically Remote. It's still free on our website, made it free to the world. And we also made a lot of tutorial videos on how to use different software. We made a couple of online courses for remote communication, just to say to our clients, we know this is not a replacement for face-to-face in a perfect world, but it's not a perfect world. And we can achieve the same results if workshops and meetings are handled correctly in the virtual world. And we actually started giving away workshops. We said, hey, let us work with you for 2 hours. There's no charge. Let us run a 2-hour workshop so you can see the levels of interaction and the levels of activity that we can really have, even though everybody's on Zoom. So going back to your question, it was really interesting to see people who were early adopters of virtual communication, whether it was meetings or whether it was activity-based workshops, who were eager to participate. They wanted to turn on their video. They wanted to go into breakout rooms and have discussions. They wanted to fill in, you know, surveys on Mentimeter or whatever we were using, versus the people who said, I'm going to just multitask and do my email during this meeting or this workshop, or I don't want to turn on my camera. Or people who 6 months into the pandemic said, I still have not had any Zoom experience, and they didn't know how to unmute themselves. It was a really big variety of what we saw. And, I was in a meeting with another company, a global company, and they said, because we can't do face-to-face, everything's shutting down and we're not going to have, you know, any more contracts. And other companies said, let's immediately make everything we were going to do face-to-face, let's make almost all of it virtual. Some of those companies have thrived and some of them haven't. And the ones that didn't thrive after 6 months or a year of COVID started to then realize, maybe I should figure out where the unmute button is. Maybe I should invest in a better webcam.
Interesting. I think everyone faces it on different wells. I mean, on different levels. Now that we're almost 3 years into it, what are some tips that you've seen? I mean, you obviously started all this whole practice years before the pandemic, and you're sort of regarded as an expert in the space. You know, released a guide on hybrid working and whatnot. That is very much the future of work. You know, we are going to live in a hybrid environment where we either pick one or the other or do both at the same time. Could you just fire off a very practical few tips in regards to communication online? Like, what can someone do to immediately or very quickly bolster their engagement level if they were communicating virtually? Let's put it on that context first.
Absolutely. The first thing to do is to realize that if we have an internal meeting or a casual meeting, we don't always have to look and sound amazing. As long as people can understand us and they're paying attention to us, it's fine. But in my line of work, where I'm facilitating workshops or I'm presenting to a large number of people, it is important to look good, to sound good. And to do that's not that difficult. Having, for example, a webcam that's close to eye level instead of a laptop that's a camera that's looking up your nose, that's a pretty easy one to do. But I still see professionals today who are in Fortune 100 companies that are leading internal teams, and they meet with me for coaching. And that's the first thing I tell them: go spend the $100 and get yourself a webcam. You know, get yourself some earbuds. They can be the wired earbuds that come with an iPhone. They can be $20. That's going to improve how you're sounding and how you look. And that in itself is a major step up. You know, we could get into there was a law firm in the United States where their lawyers also had to do some sales. They had to go and find clients, and they were finding that the salespeople who were turning on their camera were landing more deals. And when the clients were turning on their cameras, they were landing even more deals, upwards of 20% more than the other lawyers who weren't. And that was research from, the middle of the, 2000. Now it's even more important. It's who do you connect with? Who do you see? So that's the first one. The second one would be, besides looking good, the second one would be realizing that things in the virtual world take more time, but they, in terms of conversations or workshops, activities, it simply takes more time for people to hit unmute. For a room full of people, when we're together, we can look at our, business partner or colleague, and everybody knows through eye contact, that's who needs to speak next or who we're expecting to speak next. And it doesn't work that way on Zoom. So just simply that silence where no one speaks up. Add that together, a 20-minute face-to-face meeting becomes a 35-minute meeting just to cover the same content, very quickly sometimes. Also realizing that it's so easy to multitask when we're online, especially if we're not given something to do. And we have to make sure that meetings, workshops, whatever we're doing online, making sure that the people there need to be there and that they have something to do, have something to contribute, to know why it's important to be there. Because now, even more than ever, pointless meetings are even more frustrating. But sometimes when we think that meeting is pointless and we're off doing our email, something has come up in conversation that's very relevant to us and we missed it. Because I was emailing my client and I could have done, I didn't have a client emergency. I'm just trying to be productive, but as a meeting leader or even as a participant, we always have to remember that.
Is there something that you could say on touching on your other point with regards to engagement and video? As a facilitator, sometimes there are people who give who offer, you can turn your on, turn your camera on or off. However, we obviously, as you just said, the video and the engagement is much more powerful. How do you as a facilitator control that? Like, what happens if you go into a, you know, whatever room that you're doing a webinar and all, I mean, 90, 80% of the cameras are off? Is that just the way it is, or is there any way you can get people to turn their camera on?
Excellent question. So first, I love my, every answer has at least two or three moving parts. I hope you're okay with that. First, there are times where I'm presenting to a group of 200 people in a company, and we are not expecting a lot of people to come off of mute. We're not expecting them to be doing a lot of active engagement, aside from maybe apps that we're having them work on. If I'm using polls, I'm using whiteboards, sure, we want them to engage there. But if I can't physically see them, if they don't have to speak to each other or to me, no problem. That doesn't bother me. Of course, faces are great in terms of knowing how your audience is reacting. But after a while, I know if something's inherently engaging or not. I don't have to read the audience's face. But there are going to be the workshops where it's a small group. They are communicating with me. They are communicating with each other in breakout rooms. And then we have to work with the client to make sure that we have someone has some kind of either authority or inspiration to make them turn on their video, letting them know you will need a webcam, you will need a headset, you are expected to speak. It's a requirement. And there are clients that have said it's okay to kick people out who don't. Other clients say we can't do that. And it's hard to say, hi, thanks for hiring me as an outside vendor. Dear Mr. CFO, turn on your camera. I'm going to boot you out. Right. He's not going to sign off on that invoice. he or she. So, but what I love to do is not only putting in any kind of email that goes out, here's the pre-session activities we're asking you to do to get you reading and to get you doing something to really activate people before they're with me live. I love to make a quick 2-minute video that says, hello, ABC company, I'm Robert, and this is what we're going to do in our session. Let me give you 3 tips before you come in. And by them seeing me on video and hearing that they're expected to be on video and they're expected to participate, that actually goes a long way. We don't need the CFO anymore telling people you have to turn on your video. If I can inspire people by simply making a 2-minute video ahead of time, usually they see that and they say, okay, this person's dedicated to what they're doing because they've made a video specifically for this workshop for this team.
Wow. That's a very interesting, great sort of piece of advice for people. And when you make that video, is that, you post it on YouTube, share the link, or how do you send that? I mean, I'm sure there's an app for it, right? You don't have to share it now, but you can send me some details on that. But quickly, is that something that you do for a lot of your clients just to pre-engage them? And how do you do that?
It really does depend on not only the client, if we've worked with that team before, if I talk to their leader, whoever, or their HR department, whoever is hiring us, and they say there's traditionally a lack of engagement. That's something I'm going to do simply to make my workshop more successful. There's other times where I've worked with some of the clients I've worked with now, I've been working with for almost 10 years. And if they are usually highly engaged because they're all used to using video in their every day-to-day communications, I don't need to go that far. It would be overkill. But honestly, it's just, you know, I could list it on our company YouTube just as an unlisted video and send them the link. So the general public doesn't view it. It doesn't pop up in anyone's recommendations. Or I could simply send the file, especially if we have clients in mainland China and we can't send them YouTube.
Got it. Interesting. No, that's a very, very good tip. One thing that I would like to ask from a, because obviously nowadays it's very fair. And you as a speaker, facilitator, I want to sort of ask you about the other side of the table as a participant. If you could give advice to any participant to make them more engaged to a speaker like you, what could they do to help them with that? Because truth be told, not everyone is a facilitator like delivering that, but there's so many people who are going to be the receiving end of it, right? And you know, you said a few things like keep your audio, your video, don't multitask. Is there anything that I could do as a listener or someone to actually help you facilitate better, apart from just turning my thing on, having the running? Is there anything else that I could do that would help in making this whole experience better for myself, for the speaker, and even my fellow peers and colleagues, if they're not in the room physically?
Yeah. I mean, assuming if it's my program, hopefully it's going to be interactive enough, giving you something to do. Every 10 minutes, we're asking you, whether it's chat, come off of mute, even using an emoji. Hopefully there's deeper activities in that, but hopefully every 10 minutes, there's something that we're asking you in terms of your feedback or your input. Let's imagine though, that you're in a program that isn't very interactive, and that happens a lot. You know, I attend 1 hour webinars and I just sit back and listen because it's interesting content. If I feel like I need to pay attention and I'm not being given something to do, I will personally take notes. I'll take out a piece of paper and a pen, or I'll just type in on a Microsoft Word document, taking notes, even if it's something I don't think I need notes on. I give myself something to do. If I feel like I can multitask and read today's news or check my email while I half listen, then I'm going to do that. But it's also knowing that it's not my client or, you know, my colleague or somebody who's giving me possibly important information. Mm-hmm. So it does depend on the level of engagement or the level of relevance that webinar, that meeting has. As a participant though, if you were my participant, one of the things I love doing is not having to call people out and say, well, what do you think? So if I say, hey, I'd like to open this to the floor. Can somebody tell me when is a time that you felt like your meetings were useless or whatever? And we're going to open this up to volunteers. There's that silence, which is natural, especially in a virtual environment. But the moment somebody speaks up, that gets that ball rolling. So if you as a participant are the first person willing to speak up, not only are you showing the rest of your colleagues, hey, I broke the ice, and it usually gets that ball rolling, it also helps me because I can mentally or sometimes even physically check your name off on a list to say you've participated. And later, if there is more silence, I might come back to you because I know you're, you know, outgoing, or I might not come back to you because I am trying to pull answers from the other participants. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's a tip for people who don't want to speak in a workshop like mine. Speak early, and I probably won't come back to you again because I'm going to pull your other colleagues out. I'm going to get them off of mute to hear their voices, and you've already got a little check mark on my piece of paper.
Engagement is something so tricky for a lot of us, right? Because as I exactly said, so many of us are so uncomfortable with the silence. Being comfortable with that and just having patience as well too, I think is a really, really key thing. Now I noticed that we're sort of running at the end of our time now together. I just be mindful of yours, Robert. I wanted to ask you something that's in relation to authenticity. You know, for you, when I speak to you, there's a very sense of like, this is what you see is what you get, right? Which is great. And a lot of people like that. However, sometimes we don't get the opportunity to become ourselves or be confident to sort of show who we really are, especially in an online environment. What kind of advice would you give to people that they can bring off their genuine personality in a virtual environment, just for the whole objective of being able to connect with someone, right? Because I think that's what we're really lacking. And I think the theme of the future of work and hybrid virtual realities right now that we're in, there's a big lack of connection from a relationship standpoint, because it is hard to develop that. Can you share with us like one piece of advice for anyone today in a remote working world? How can they become more authentic over video?
You know, the way I approach this is beyond virtual. It's if you've got a face-to-face meeting, whether it's with a client or whether it's with your internal team or whether it is virtual, the number one thing people can do is consider who is going to be in the room or the virtual room with them and really think about what are the needs and the goals that they have. And how can we take our experience and work that in to help them, to benefit them, or to at least give them the information that they're looking for? You know, it's authenticity is, yes, speaking what you know, you know, presenting yourself as a real person, not putting on a show. There's voice and body language tactics that we can use to be authentic. And then there's also the fake salesperson. But that is important. But what's more important is asking people the right questions that they're going to be interested in and bringing up the topics and the perspectives that are likely going to be understood by them and even helpful to them. I'll give you an example. I do a lot of communication programs and I've got a lot of different clients with a lot of different teams and they all have different needs. Some of these teams, they don't speak very well to each other in virtual programs, and other teams speak so well, they actually have a lot of conflict because they're just asserting, and their ideas don't mesh. So if I go into both of those extreme clients and say, hey, I've got a presentation program, let me pitch it to you, it's probably going to fail. That pitch is going to fail because one team doesn't need to give public speeches. They need to simply start communicating on an everyday level and speaking off of mute in their internal meetings. They don't need to give presentations to big audiences. They need to speak their mind in a group of five people. At the other side of things, that very extroverted, very assertive group, if I pitch a public speaking program to them, that's the last thing their manager wants. They want them to shut up and start listening. So I've got to do that same thing. I've got to really say, well, what does your team need? And let me give you some of the experiences that I've had or that other clients have had that might work for the goals that you have for your team members. And that's just me as a consultant, but anybody could go into any meeting. There could be an accountant going into a meeting with their boss. And if they're ready to just, you know, talk about accounting from their point of view, then that's, you know, that's valuable experience. But if they never consider or even ask their boss, what does your business need from the accounting team? Then they could fire off accounting ideas for an hour and all of them could miss the mark because they've never thought from the other person's point of view.
That empathy is key to being authentic.
Yep.
That's what I'm hearing from you. Understanding what it's like to be in their shoes, whether it's to sit back and be patient and quiet and observant, or to say, hey guys, you got to talk on another level, which is not the pitching level, but more of the everyday communication level. Wonderful advice. The last thing that I wanted to ask of you, Robert, is what are you working on now?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, I just released the Hybrid Live Guide, which is available for free on our website, or $5 on Amazon. same thing though, you can pay for it or get it for free, your choice. I'm getting feedback on that, and I'm looking at a second version, not necessarily a second version, but an updated version of the first one, just to add some ideas. People have asked some questions, and I said that's a great thing I could put into an updated version. And I am speaking in May at the Association for Talent Development Conference in Orlando, Florida, about hybrid workshops. So between now and 3 months from now, I'm going to be running some hybrid workshops to not only test out some new things that I'm thinking about bringing into that bigger conference venue, but also just to spread, you know, the word about the book that I've released and also how people can use virtual maybe in a better way than they are now. And that's just kind of in addition to the regular client engagements that I have. As the Lunar New Year or Chinese New Year just was last week. Now is go time for a lot of companies in Asia to to be past the holidays. So there's, it is traditionally a very busy time of the year, and I'm still happy to be here. I'm very happy to be doing things that I love, even if I don't get to go face to face like I did, you know, 2.5 years ago now.
That's I think you're going to be getting that opportunity soon. I can't stop, like I said earlier prior to recording, I can't stop asking you questions, but I'm curious, when you said a lot of people have questions because you're going to be what you're working on now is the version, you know, 2.0, or just a bit of an addition to your hybrid life guide. What is the question that you get asked the most, or what have you been asked a lot coming up, like now that you've released it, getting the feedback? I'm just very curious to know, what is that question that you're being asked the most of?
That's, you know, I honestly don't have a repeat question coming from a lot of people. Usually when people have a question, it's something that's very, you know, personal to them, personal to the work that they're doing, where they might want a piece of advice. One that popped out, though, that I'm going to put into an updated version is somebody said, I've got a lot of information for a facilitator, and I've got a lot of talking points that a facilitator could use with a client, or it doesn't have to be an external client. It could be somebody's manager wants them to run a hybrid workshop. You know, there are some questions to and some talking points to make sure that hybrid is, first of all, the right solution, because there's a lot of times it's not. There's and I write about that in my book. Hybrid shouldn't be the go-to. If you can do a face-to-face version and a virtual version separately, even though that's maybe twice as long in a workshop, it's ultimately probably going to have better results for everyone involved. But if hybrid is the way to go, there are some ways to do it correctly. So the question I had was, what about a participant? It's kind of like what you asked me earlier. What could a participant do in a hybrid session to make it successful? And I've spoken a lot from a facilitator's point of view, but I do want to add some content from a participant's point of view, which wasn't my target audience when I wrote the book, but I do think it is valuable, even as a checklist that somebody could print off as a facilitator and then maybe distribute that to, you know, for pre-workshop reading. Here are 10 tips to make this successful, because hybrid is difficult and we want to make it successful. We don't want to waste your time. But it is very, very easy to get behind schedule in a hybrid environment.
Like, this has been so invaluable, and we can't wait for the next updated version of your hybrid live guide. Also to sort of have the people in the Americas to see if they're going to be able to see you in person in Orlando. So that'll be really interesting as well too. So we're going to post up all your links and all the nuggets of information and references in the description of the podcast. So with that being said, Robert, it was an absolute pleasure to have you on Business Wellness Podcast. I look forward to having another, because I'm sure the feedback will sort of have people asking you more questions. So I'm excited for that. Thank you so much for your time, Robert.
Well, thank you, Nathan. This has been an enjoyable experience, and I'm happy to field questions if your audience has any. Send them my way.
Awesome. Thanks.